This is Digital Story Podcast number 647, August 7th, 2018. Today's theme is Digitizing, Printing, and More. I'm Derek Story. I guess you could say I'm a two-way photographer. In one direction, I'm keenly interested in making prints for my digital images. Going the other way, I'm fascinated by methods for digitizing my analog shots. And in today's TVS podcast, I talk with Peter Krog, author of Digitizing Your Photos. Then I share my first experiences with the Canon Pro 100 printer and Red River's Polar Luster Metallic Paper. What a show. Stay tuned. So I ran across Peter's book, Digitizing Your Photos with Your Camera in Lightroom. Just sort of stumbled across it through an email blast from him, actually. And I took a look at it and I go, oh my gosh, I got to get this guy on the show. Now, I know Peter from before. He and I spent time in Iceland together on the very first Lightroom adventure. And I've kind of loosely kept in touch with him ever since. And he's the guy that I go to for digital asset management. He is the guy that wrote the damn book. However, he also wrote this other book about digitizing your photos. And as I got into it, I go, oh my gosh, this is what I've been looking for. And I said, okay, here we go. We are going to chat this up a bit. Now, before we get too far into the interview, I just want to let you know that I have a link to his book in the show notes. And I also have a coupon code if you want to save 10%. So I'll mention that again, but I don't want to forget that because it's, very handy to save money, right? That is also efficient. So anyway, here's Peter, and let's talk a little bit about this book of his.
Peter, how are you doing?
Derek, I am doing great, and it's great to talk to you. It's been a long time.
So it was interesting. You know, I know you as a digital asset manager guy. You know, in addition to, you know, you run a photography business and a great photographer. But you sent me an email the other day. And in that email was this book that I didn't know you even did. And I'm really very interested in it, Digitizing Your Photos, the damn book guide to digitizing your photos with your camera in Lightroom. And I was going, okay, I got to look at this. So I got the book and I'm looking at it and you've got a cool approach here. And if you don't mind, I'd like to talk about that for a minute.
I would love to talk about that.
Okay, where did this come from? I mean, obviously this probably scratched some need somewhere.
Yeah, well, it obviously did, yeah. And really, like everything that I research and write about, I really start from a position of trying to solve my own problems. And in this case, it was a massive amount of film and prints that I've created as both a professional and avid enthusiast photographer over the last 40 some years and wanting to get them digitized.
I have stuff that I'm creating right now and I'm always just looking for really the best way to manage that. And so I think for me and a lot of people, this book is relevant for people that are creating content right now as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I was talking to Richard Kelly about this and he said, there's a lot of hybrid photographers out there, people who love the process of film and also love the process of digital. And he said that there's a lot of them who want to shoot at film and, you know, they like that part of the process, but darkroom for printing feels a little tedious and, you know, the productivity isn't quite there compared to, you know, it isn't even close to what you can do digitally in terms of the number of images you can process and how you can make them available. And so it absolutely works for the hybrid photographer as well. And I'm hearing that from readers.
That's me. I mean, you just described me. I love the process of shooting film. I like film cameras. I enjoy them. I like what I can get with film. It makes me a different photographer. But I am never going back into the darkroom. I spent too many years in there and I'm not going back. So once that film gets processed, that I can do in a daylight box or send out. But once that film gets processed, then I want to be a digital guy from that point forward. and use my, you know, my computer and my inkjet printer and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, when I'm looking at what you're doing here, you're really talking about solving a big problem for me, which is, you know, digitizing the images once you have that film or once you have that print. And tell me a little bit about your thinking on what you recommend and how you got there.
In the sort of 2007, 8, 9 period, I was working on a Library of Congress grant called DP Bestflow, and that website is still up and running. And one of the things that we did there was to do a little more formalization of the processes of using a camera as a scanner, and also presented this to people like the National Archives, what we had found and what was validated by those presentations were that the scans coming out of a good DSLR were useful for nearly anything you want to do with your pictures. And of course, software and cameras have only gotten better.
So I've played around with scanners, you know, my whole time. And you know,
best place in hell, sitting at the scanner waiting for it to go zzz, zzz.
And I don't know why I've never really gotten what I want to get. Now, I've tried the low-end scanners for just like quick stuff, you know, for web. And a lot of times I just really find myself asking why, you know, after I have spent this time, why didn't I just put it on the light box and, you know, shoot it with the camera and be done with it. But I think part of it is for me, and maybe this is what you can help me with a little bit, is that I never really got a, you know, the little scanners are sitting there ready and you, know, you just put it in and you do it. And I always felt like that when I did it with the camera, I got the results that I wanted for sure. But that, you know, I always spent a lot of time kind of fooling around with it, you know, to get to that point. How do you get around that, or is that just part of it?
As you see in the book, I outline about a half a dozen different contraptions that you can use, you know, everything from a, you know, a tripod and a light table to, you know, an old dedicated film scanner, or sorry, film duplicator, the kind that's color head from an enlarger that's turned upside down, to my favorite for 35 millimeter is a rail system. And one of the points of putting this book together and making it like a cookbook is to take that trial and error and guesswork out of how do you do this? You know, so you have certain things that you want to do, like make sure the camera is parallel to the film or print. And, you know, I show techniques like how to use a mirror to very easily make sure that your camera is parallel to the film. There's a part of it that's really about the setup, and that's an important part of it. And I would also say that, you know, there's kind of two things. One is that you can either, if you've got, say, one good digital camera and you use it both to shoot in the world and to you want to use it for copying, then you really would probably want to set up and do a session where you do a bunch of stuff. If it's a kind of thing where you may need to do a little bit here and there, then you would want to make sure that you have a setup that's easy to just, you know, plop the camera onto it and be off and running, which, that, you know, there definitely are some with, you know, the right quick release mounts and stuff where you have everything all set up and you could, you know, if you could keep your lights set up, then you can make it a thing where you just pop the camera on and, you know, scan your most recent roll and you're off to the races.
Yeah. And that's kind of more what I'm thinking. And, you know, I don't think I'm totally unusual here in that I probably have a very good digital camera that could be more or less dedicated to a project like this and have that set up all calibrated and ready to go. And then I think then, you know, having that, and of course, there's always a room, and a lot of folks don't have as much. I mean, we both have studios, so we have a little bit of an advantage that way.
Yeah.
Then suddenly, if that ease of just say, hey, I've got the film right now, and you can come away with the scans 15 minutes later, then I think suddenly we start doing it more, right? Is because
yeah, and you know, for me, I definitely am moving my camera on and off. I have one camera that's higher resolution than the others, and you want to use the highest resolution camera you can, and you want to use the best macro lens that you've got. You know, after experimenting with these processes for so long, it's actually pretty easy for me to set up. I can I can be up and running in under 15 minutes to do slides or negatives.
Does your do your eyes see, you know, a different quality when you digitize with a camera opposed to a scanner? Because they're kind of different tools that way.
You know, there's a couple of different components. One is resolution. The way that we tested this back in the day, whatever this was, 2008 or 9, testing against the Nikon 8000. And at that point, the best DSLR we could get was a 24 megapixel Canon. And then made 3 footprints. It was absolutely clear that the camera scan beat out the Nikon scan. And surprisingly, one of the things that I saw when I made 3 footprints and had two to compare was that the Nikon wasn't sharp in the corners because of film curl. And whereas the camera scan was sharp corner to corner. And that, you know, that in and of itself right there was a major quality difference. So there's a couple of things. One is, you know, general resolution and sharpness. Photographers are already always interested in that, and you want to make sure you're capturing the detail. But there's another one that is a little bit subtle until you think it through and until you actually start working on it. When you use a regular scanner, you almost always need to do a pre-scan, and then you need to do some tweaking of the settings, and then you actually run the real scan. One of the problems there is that you have this time that a skilled operator needs to be paying attention in between each scan, and which is one of the reasons it's just so frustrating and seems like it takes so long. Whereas with a digital camera shooting raw, you can really just scan at the same setting, sit down and do literally thousands of images at a time, just making sure that your, you know, your settings are staying the same. And then you do all of your adjustment later. So you can do this capture really quickly and on a very large scale. And then you go back and say, well, okay, this image and this image and this image, I want to make these, you know, I want to make them perfect. I want to get them ready to print. But you don't have to stop and optimize in between each image like you do with most scanners.
That's a really good point.
One more thing before you move, and that is that my suggestion is that you use a diffused light source. And just like a diffusion enlarger compared to a condenser enlarger, it minimizes the defects in the film itself when you shoot a camera scan. You know, the more highly focused light of a condenser enlarger emphasizes those defects. So you actually can minimize them to some degree by just the light source itself.
That's a really good tip. And when we think about it, it's just like taking a portrait in bright sun versus a softbox or a diffuser, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about Lightroom. You understand Lightroom. You have written about Lightroom extensively. How does Lightroom work as an asset manager for these scans that we do?
To pick up on a point I just made earlier, the fact that we'll probably want to scan lots of material. One of the advantages of low-cost, high-speed scanning is you can scan lots of material. And then this process of selecting images and then optimizing the images to make them look the way you want them to look, that really becomes an intertwined process in Lightroom, because you have your library module and your develop module right there. And so you can, you know, in my case, this book uses an example of my family photo archive, which was tens of thousands of slides, prints, negatives, glass plates, daguerreotypes, all this stuff. And as I would go through it and make, you know, a collection that's about my dad or about my grandmother or, you know, about my kids, then I can select the images and say, okay, well, these need to be optimized. and you just pop straight over to the develop module and fix what you need to fix for the project at hand. If it's a, you know, high value project like a book, you fix it perfectly. If it's a Christmas slideshow of the family and we'll run through a ton of historic documents, and everybody loves that. And in those cases, it doesn't have to be fixed. It just has to look okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So having, Lightroom really does allow you to intertwine those processes. And then the ability to tag for location or face tagging, I'll talk about that in a second, lets you find images of people, lets you tag images of particular people and events. And then using the collections tool, you can curate them into different kinds of projects, like these are the things I want to print, or these are the things I want to put up on a website. And again, it's all very seamless, and it lets you, gives you a home for the curation work as you do more to organize the pictures into subgroups and into different projects.
Yeah, and the organizing thing, as we all know, is always a challenge with scanned images. And why don't you talk a little bit about some of your favorite tips that you might have for helping us tame this part of, our library?
Sure. Depending on the nature of your collection, if you're working with a family photo collection like I was, there were pictures literally going back to the 1850s from my family and all the way up to when, I guess the latest would be when my mom stopped shooting film in the early 2000s or mid 2000s. And one of the most important things that we did was to use Lightroom's face tagging tool to tag images of different people. And by the time we finished training it, it could recognize my father from 2 years old to 80.
Wow.
And now it was absolutely not perfect and sometimes comically so, but they've, sort of gamified the ability to tag different people. And I have got to be at least 1,000 different people tagged in that collection. So it's, I have groups like the people I went to high school with, or the people I went to college with, or my parents and their friends and my grandparents and older relatives. One of the things we do was shoot the front and the back of every picture that's every print. And that way we could, at our leisure, go back and if there was any writing or any captions on the back, turn that into metadata that we kept in Lightroom.
Nice.
And so that was a really valuable thing. And my daughter did a lot of the work there. And then there were times she sat down with my dad and said, who's this? What's this about? And there were things I had never heard of before. We put that into the caption information, into the images, and in Lightroom. And that becomes this repository of the knowledge about the family in a way that there's no other vehicle that I even know of that you could use to keep that information and make it accessible over the long term. I use the location tags, but putting that location information also became really important in terms of making images discoverable. And so that's, country, state, city, and sublocation. And that becomes a really interesting place to store history as well. People move from place to place. And, there was this Colonial Beach Hotel that my great uncle owned, and having that tagged, my father as a kid used to go down there every summer. And so that information is now preserved in the fact that you can see pictures of my dad, feet dangling in the water, sitting on the pier, and it says Colonial Beach Hotel.
That's great. I mean, I think location information is just, even in my everyday photography, I love it. I just love it. It adds a true missing dimension for me, I think, in terms of location a lot, just in my life and in the pictures.
Yep.
I take. And having, that added to these images, to me, is priceless. I mean, really, it's just makes the whole thing come to life.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, where possible, we also would add GPS tags. So, you know, in the houses, there were a lot of pictures in, you know, various people's houses. And where I, you know, when I knew what that address was, I used the map module in Lightroom to pinpoint the GPS coordinates and then saved that preset, you know, 7205 Honeywell Lane, the house I grew up in, not only has the address and the city and state country, but it also has a geolocation attached to it.
That's nice. Wow. You know, there's a, I could really keep you on the line for like a long time here. I won't, but there's one other thing I want to get to before we get off here, which is, so have you done much inkjet printing, you know, from these scans out of Lightroom onto your printer? And how did that all go for you?
For print material, I did start with a camera profiled capture. So I used the X-Rite and the DNG profile editor to get something accurate. Although in the vast majority of cases, I ended up going for pleasing images rather than accurate. In many cases, you know, smallish pictures blown up showed all kinds of information that you couldn't really see in the original picture. The ability to fix a black point from on a faded image, or to fix the color balance on a faded image, makes those prints significantly better than the originals, whether they were slides, negatives, or prints.
Yeah, and did you feel that you could get something, and for lack of a better term, that was like photographic after you had run through this whole process, including the output on the inkjet printer? You know, could you get an image that you go, that feels like a photograph? And I know that sounds kind of weird, the way I'm saying it, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, so to take one example, there's a picture of my grandfather from the 20s. I thought it had been his Naval Academy picture, but apparently he was a little older. And there's a beautiful framed portrait that has kind of a sepia look that hung in my parents' house for a long time. With a camera scan of that image, in that case, I matched the sepia look and really matched as best I could the original, because the original was so beautiful, and then printed it out on a fine art paper. And it really had the feel of the original image in a way that, when matted and framed, was really indistinguishable from the original.
That's really exciting, isn't it? I mean,
you have only one of these, and you know, if you there's now, you know, 40 or more descendants of that guy, and there's only going to be one of those prints, and so it solves a lot of problems. I just love the idea of unlocking history, making it digital, making it accessible, and then being able to distribute it to the people who ought to see it.
I do too. I love this, everything about this. So just tell me about the book for a second. I have the electronic version, but we're talking about digitizing your photos. It comes in a couple different ways, and we can get it from your website. Just kind of, you know, give us your author's pitch on this thing.
Are really more of a course than a book, because it's, I can't remember exactly how many, but more than 100 different videos in the book.
Nine hours, it says, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
But all in the vast majority of them are, you know, 1 to 5 minutes. And this grew out of my Library of Congress project with Richard Anderson, where we said, well, you know, teaching workflow in a book is kind of hard. It's hard to learn it, you know, give me these steps and now I have to go try it myself, as opposed to just show me you doing it. And, oh, I see it, you know, and for photographers, definitely learn better that way. The way these books are built is the stuff that needs to be in text, you know, here's what we're going to do next, here's why, and here's the setup. Then let me show you in video, and then where appropriate, let me outline the steps afterwards, so that when you come back to actually put it into practice, you don't have to watch the videos. You can just say, oh, yeah, there's, you know, steps 1 through 8. Or if you don't remember how to do steps 1 through 8, you can launch the video again and see it. Most people do buy the digital download copy, and then, you know, it's a PDF with embedded videos. And so the whole thing is very seamlessly created to be a multimedia book, really much more of a course, you know, right from the beginning. We do a 10% discount. The book is only $34.95 at regular price for the digital download, and the 10% discount for listeners of The Digital Story. We're really happy to be able to put this work out there. And, you know, I'm hearing wonderful things from people about how they're unlocking their collections.
This book is worth every penny of $34.95. I mean, really, it is terrific. I mean, just the minute you look at the table of contents, even before you get into it, you go, everything I need to know is right here, honestly. So,
well, and one of the things we've done also is taken the stuff that's going to change and linked to pages on my website at thedambook.com to, you know, so for instance, when this book was written, the Nikon D850 and the Sony A7R3, can't get the Sony names in my head. You know, the new 45 megapixel camera had not been announced yet. And so now they are. And so I do link those, and I, you know, link to what kind of lenses are the good ones to buy and new developments. So that way the book can stay kind of evergreen, even as there's new developments in the industry. So it's not just multimedia and book and video, but it also has this website component for changing information.
That's awesome. Peter, I really appreciate you taking time out to talk about this. This is just such a great subject. And good job on the book. And thank you for writing me about it, and so that it got on my radar.
I'm really thrilled to spread the word, and thanks for having me on the podcast.
Great. All right. Hopefully we won't go a year and a half before we talk again.
I hope so.
All right. Take care, Peter.
All right, that was just awesome. Thanks again, Peter, so much for hanging out with us. And I have a link to his book in the show notes. I also have a coupon code, AFFSTORY. You can use that at checkout. Save 10%. Go over there and get this book and start digitizing some of that content you have, whether they're family prints, whether they're your old negatives, whether they're slides, whatever they are. Get that content into the mix with all your other stuff that you're shooting right now. You'll be happy that you did. Setting up and testing the Canon Pro 100 printer. So now that the rebate has been received, I really feel like I can move ahead with this printer. And I don't know why I was waiting until I got the rebate before I really, you know, unboxed it and got serious about it. But not that I was going to do anything. I did. I got it all unpackaged. I got the printer head in there. I got the ink cartridges inserted. And I started making some prints. And I thought I would share with you a little bit about this printer, because until the end of August, the rebate is still there, the $250 rebate. And right now, with that rebate, the resulting price, the final price, is $119.99. So is this printer worth $119? And I would say, I can tell you right now, it definitely is. Pretty much the ink that you get with the printer is worth $119. Because they're nice cartridges. I did some printing, and I checked the supply level, and you know, it wasn't like they're all drained. So they gave us pretty good cartridges with the printer. A couple things about this. The Pro 100 has been around for a while, and in part, that's why we're getting such a good price on it. That being said, it also is a great printer. I mean, it makes great images, and I was comparing it to my Epson and the other Canon printer I have, and I mean, it looks fantastic. Where I really notice its age is in the setup of the printer. So there's a couple ways you can go. Like, for instance, if you're on a Mac, and you're going to use the printer connected via USB cable, it's pretty straightforward. You turn on the printer, you connect the USB cable, you go to your printer setup, you add a new printer, your Mac will see it, it'll say, hey, do you want to download the software for this? So you say yes, it downloads the software, and you're ready to go. And if that's all you're going to use this printer for, and you were a Mac user, that's all you have to do, And I would imagine that with Windows 10, it is probably not too painful either. Some sort of process like that. Although I haven't set it up with Windows 10, so I don't know exactly. However, if you get into wanting to use it via Wi-Fi, if you want to do AirPrint from your mobile devices, then it gets a little more interesting, and it shows its age in terms of when it was created, because then you have to pull out the CD. And I know, because I tried going online and I could find the basic software, but I couldn't find the software to set it up wirelessly. So I was going, what the heck? So I had to dig out the CD reader driver thing, plug it in to my laptop, put the CD in, and then walk through these ancient menu screens. They look like they were, you know, designed in 1995. Really bad. HTML beta 1.0 or something. I don't know what it was, but it was. And you get to the what they call the LAN setup, right? I did go through that process, and it took a while, but I did get the printer configured for my network. Now, what's different about the Pro 100 versus, let's say, the more modern consumer printers from Canon is that it doesn't have an LCD screen. So, for instance, on my, what is it, my 6880, I believe, the little multifunction printer that I just love from Canon, you can basically do everything just using the LCD on the printer itself. Well, the Pro 100 doesn't have that. So then your computer becomes the interface for doing stuff like choosing the wireless network, setting up the password for the wireless network, doing all that kind of stuff. So I just wanted to warn you that, yes, if you're just going to do USB, not a problem. But if you want to set up wirelessly, then you got to find a way to, you know, use the software that comes with it in order to do that, because you don't have an LCD screen. That being said, once it's set up, it works really well. So I tested it via Wi-Fi, via a couple computers, printed no problem and printed great. And then I also made a print for my iPhone 10 using AirPrint. Again, no problem, showed up, made the right print, did the whole thing, it was great. So I'm really glad that I kind of stuck it out and went through the process, because now I can use it all these different ways. Now, in terms of printing speed, the printing speed is pretty good, I would have to say. It's faster than the Epson that it's replacing, that's for sure. The startup time is definitely faster than my Epson. And the Epson drove me crazy, because you would start it up and it felt like you had to wait forever before you could print. The Canon, you start it up. The Pro 100, you start it up and it's ready to print. It feels like in less than a minute. It's pretty fast. So I really like that a lot, because when I want to print, I want to print. And I don't want to sit there and listen to the printer jiggle back and forth on the table. It looks good too. It's a good looking printer. I love the power button, the power on button and all that. The styling is quite good, and really like that. The paper feed was sure. Did single sheets. I put a stack of 5x7s in. I, you know, tried to irritate it, and it did real well. So I like the printer a lot. I'm really glad I got it. It only cost me $69 on the sale that I got it on, but even at $119, which you can get it for right now, I think it's terrific. So I have a link to it, to the page that has the rebate and all that sort of stuff in the show notes. If you're interested in a good 13-inch printer, not absolutely modern in terms of like LCD interface and all that kind of stuff, but definitely very current in terms of print quality, and you can't beat the price. Like I said, the ink that comes with it is basically worth the price. Then I recommend the Pro 100. It's a good printer. I hope to be using it for a long, long time. The amazing Red River Polar Luster Metallic 255 inkjet printing paper. So one of the things that I really wanted to do with the new Canon printer was print on this new metallic paper from Red River Paper. They sent me some samples. I fired up the 100 and I got right to it with this Luster Metallic. And I have to tell you, this is really interesting paper. I mean, I really like this paper. First of all, the metallic part of the paper, you really notice when you shine a light directly on it. And these are prints, on the smaller prints I noticed, these are prints that are really fun to handhold, because what you can do is you can move them around and have the light hit them differently in your hand. And the print, it changes. It comes to life in these different areas. It glows. That metallic base is very pleasant. I mean, it's very, very beautiful. And it's not like bad metallic where it does the bronzing thing at all. No, this is good. I mean, this is just neat, that like metal things in the paper, you know, really look metally, and like the coppery tones look really great. I've got these buildings that are lit with tungsten lighting. Really cool. I just got a stack of prints right here I'm playing with that I printed today. It's fascinating. So one of the things that I do when I print is, you know, I have my regular room lighting in the printing room, but then I also have this strong overhead light that I can turn on. It's on a dimmer, and I use that for inspecting the prints. So I was inspecting the prints with the strong light from these light bulbs, and I was going, wow, this is really neat. I mean, I love to show off the print, you know, where that metallic base, you know, really is highlighted by this direct light. I'm going, what can I do? So I started looking around the studio, and there's this one area over by the entry, and there's an entry light above. Terrible fixture. I've hated that fixture since I lived here. I've replaced a lot of fixtures here. I never got around to this one. See, you know, it's the old one with the three little bulbs and then this sort of grainy gold cover. And I mean, it really looks like it's out of the 80s. It's not attractive at all. I just have ignored it because it's sort of an entryway light and I don't even use it that often. However, there is some great wall space right there by this entryway. And I was thinking, if I take out that fixture and I put in a fixture with three directional lights, you know, that I can aim, I have two walls where I can put this directional light and then put these metallic prints on these two walls and really just enjoy the heck out of them. And that's what I'm going to do. I mean, really, it's funny how one thing leads to another, and this leads to a little bit of a remodeling project. It's just changing a fixture. It's not going to be that bad. It'll be a Saturday afternoon, right? And first I got to go find the fixture, but that's what hardware stores are for. But it's going to be fantastic once I do this. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to mount the prints without any glass. I don't want any glass. I'll have to figure out how to do that. You know, how I want to do it. I might float them in a frame. I'm not exactly sure yet. I got to get the lighting set up first, but I don't want any glass over them because I really want the interaction, you know, to be just with the print and the person, with just air in between and this directional light shining on these to really highlight the metallic nature of them. As you can tell, I'm really jazzed by this paper. So it is Red River Polar Luster Metallic 255. I've got the link in the show notes that'll take you right over to the page that has all the different sizes. You can get like 5x7s, you can get 13x19, you can, you know, they have a number of different sizes of this paper stock. It's brand new. They say it's in limited quantities right now. I would imagine it's very difficult to make because, I mean, you just look at it and you go, this is unique paper. It works fantastic. And I ran it through the Pro 100, and on one shot that I did, a drone shot, I put it at the highest resolution, which was 1200 by 1200, and then super fine quality, and the detail in that shot is just, it's amazing. This is a good printer, and this paper really shows off the quality of the printer. I'll let you know once I get the lights up for this and I get those bright halogen lights on this cool metallic paper. Until then, I'm just going to have a lot of fun hand-holding the prints and just enjoying them. Good stuff. Run some of this through your printer and see what you think. All right, just a couple more little things before we sign off here. Inner Circle members, I want to let you know that I'm already testing the new Panasonic Lumix Tough camera. It's pretty fun. So I'm going to make the movie this week. I'm going to record the movie this week, and hopefully I'll edit it fairly quickly. I'm not going to get too fancy on the editing, and should have that up to share with you on Patreon before too long. But I'm working with it. I love the camera. It's a lot of fun. And I look forward to sharing that video with you, that behind the scenes video of it involves pools and things. It's going to be a blast. And it's just another way for me to say thank you for supporting the site and for, you know, really helping me keep this podcast on the air and helping me with all the other projects that I want to do. You know, I want to create this content for you guys, and, you know, Patreon members are right at the front of the line helping me do that. And then I also want to give a shout out, of course, to Red River Paper. Thank you, guys, for making this Polar Luster Metallic 255. Thank you for sending me a box of it, and thank you for sponsoring the show. You guys are very high on my list right now. All right, well, that's going to do it for me this week. Thanks so much for joining me. Lots of fun stuff for you to play with. I hope you do something creative. Hope you digitize some stuff. Hope you do some printing. Just go out there and be a photographer, and I'll see you back here next week. Until then, bye-bye now.